About $490 billion go to defense spending in 2015 in the base budget. That's just under the $500 billion cap congressional leaders Patty Murray and Paul Ryan set last year in the Bipartisan Budget Act. Overseas Contingency Operations gets $64 billion in fiscal 2015. Gordon Adams is Distinguished Fellow at the Stimson Center and Professor of International Relations at American University, writing about the deal in Foreign Policy and describing it as a shell game. Gordon, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. Why is this a shell game? Because that infers to me that people are just moving around a bunch of stuff trying to fool people.
Well, they're certainly moving a lot of stuff around. I don't know if it's going to fool very many people, but they're moving it around. We're really talking here, Francis, about what the magic money, as I call it, the Overseas Contingencies Operations Budget that the Defense Department asks for and generally receives. The thing about the OCO budget is that it's money above the caps. The base defense budget is held at a certain level, as you said in your intro, by the caps. That cap is about $500 billion this year, and when you put military construction in with the defense money that they appropriated yesterday, you'd be about hit that cap. But members of Congress really have things they want to have, and they'd like to fit them under that cap if they can. And how do they do that? Well, they use what I call the magic money, the OCO account. OCO is supposed to cover war operations. It was built primarily for Iraq and Afghanistan. It is money that is not counted against the ceilings that Senator Murray and Congressman Ryan negotiated at the end of 2013. It is, as if you will, extra money for the Department of Defense. And it's the way the department has essentially escaped the deepest impact of sequester over the last 3 years. What the Congress did when they discovered OCO was they found a way to play the shell game. What the shell game means is you take money in operations and maintenance in the base budget, you move it over to the OCO budget, the war budget, and you've created room under the caps in the base budget. And then what you do is you put in program in the base budget that either the services wanted but didn't get in their own budget scrub or the members want to have. So, for example, this year in the mark that they did yesterday, the Army operations and maintenance budget was cut by $1.3 billion. But miraculously, $850 million of that was transferred over to the OCO budget. Navy, same thing, cut 1.3, transferred 850. Marines cut $800 million in operations, but $350 million restored in OCO. Air Force, $800 million down, $850 magically reappearing in the OCO account. What'd they get for the money? Well, the Army got things like more money for Apache and Black Hawk helicopters, modifications of the Patriot, family of medium vehicles, that famous Abrams tank that they're trying to keep alive even though the Army doesn't want it. The Navy got 15 F-18 Growler aircraft that the Navy wanted, but they didn't get in the budget scrub. Well, now they got them. Tomahawk missiles, a new amphibious ship that I'm sure Senator Cochran, the incoming chair of appropriations, had something to do with. Air Force got a couple F-35s, another C-130J, some more Reaper drones, kept the A-10 alive even though the Air Force wanted to kill it. So, in other words, what the appropriators have done is make room in the base budget by moving operational money over to the OCO account, thereby, of course, guaranteeing that the readiness funds would still be there, and then filling in the empty hole in the base budget with programs that they wanted. In some cases, so did the services, but they didn't get it.
You write, this kind of budgeting puts the lie to the myth that defense is underfunded and badly needs more given the threats we now face. Is this a funding issue or a priorities issue or both? Because there are documented stories of end-user readiness issues in each of the branches of the military, Gordon. Are they just not putting the money in the right places?
I don't think they're putting the money in the right places. You know, readiness is a kind of a slippery concept here. The services can't fully tell you exactly what in their budget goes to cover readiness. They know they have to stand down some aircraft. They know they have to stand some operations on tank operations and the things when the going gets tough. But they can't really do a one-to-one correlation between their budgets and their readiness. The real problem here, if you will, the hidden secret behind this, is that the operations and maintenance account, where the houses and Senate are moving all this money around, covers not just readiness. In fact, Congressional Budget Office estimates that 60% of those dollars are really infrastructure, and I don't mean buildings, I mean people. I mean, 800,000 civil servants, 700,000 contractor service personnel, people who are doing jobs in the military that should be not in being done by people in uniform. The Department of Defense has 1.8 million people basically supporting the combat activity of 1.1 million people. It's a big overhead. Rather than shrink that overhead, the services like the squeeze, the readiness, it makes a better case for raising the budget.
The mechanism is what you've talked about mostly. What difference would it be different if somehow the White House, whether it's this administration or another one, and Congress decided, okay, the total amount that we should spend is $560 billion, and it's all just going to be in the base budget, and we're going to get rid of the IOCA. Would that solve the problem, Gordon?
Wouldn't solve the problem, but it would force careful trade-offs in the way the administration prepares the budget. See, what's happened here, miraculously, is the services have discovered they can put things in the IOCA budget that are really things that belong in the base budget. The Congress, as I have described, has discovered that the IOCA budget is a useful safety valve for things they want in the base budget. And even the White House has discovered this. This past 6 months, the White House has asked for money it had not previously requested in the IOCA budget for Ebola, for supporting the ISIS operations, for the Counterterrorism Partnership Fund, for $1 billion to support the Europeans in Eastern Europe, stuff that wasn't built into their program. They, too, have discovered a useful device in IOCA. The problem we have is because everybody now thinks it's useful, the White House, the Pentagon, the services, and the Congress, we're likely to see this shell game for a very long time to come. What it does is erode budget planning discipline in the Pentagon.
And that's where I wanted to go next. You anticipated my question, which is, if that's not the solution, the one I proposed, then what is the solution and the likelihood that that solution may ever happen?
Well, the best solution is that the White House gives firm fiscal guidance to the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense civilian leadership, and this is something I acknowledge that Secretary Hagel did not do, the civilian leadership needs to give a clear fiscal message to the services. The services need to plan to that message, and the building needs to bear down on what I call their fiscal trade space, which is the overhead in the Department of Defense. That's where they will find the money. IOCA ought to go away. I'm less and less confident that it will.
Gordon Adams, writing in Foreign Policy under the title Congress's Defense Spending, Nothing More Than a Shell Game. Always great to have you on the program, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me.